Welcome to Radio Prague's special New Year's Day program dedicated to the 15th anniversary of the foundation of the Czech Republic. The country now celebrates two foundation days, the 28th of October in the memory of the establishment of Czechoslovakia in 1918, and the 1st of January. On that day, in 1993, Czechoslovakia split into two countries, Slovakia and the Czech Republic. The latter anniversary seems to be rather less celebrated, as if it had happened by coincidence. To discuss the achievements and the losses, the victories and defeats of the 15-year-old Czech state, I am joined in the studio by Professor Vladimíra Dvořáková, a political scientist of the University of Economics in Prague, Dr. Josef Skála, an advisor on foreign issues of the Communist Party's Central Committee, and Jaroslav Plesl, deputy editor-in-chief of the daily Lidové noviny. Thank you all for coming and welcome to the program. The Czech Republic seems to be doing very well at the moment. The economy is growing, the Czech crown is strengthening, the unemployment rate is very low, and we have a government which is introducing long-awaited reforms. Ms. Dvořáková, are Czechs living in the best of times since 1989?
I think it depends on which Czechs we are speaking about. Yeah, that means there can be different opinions. Anyway, I would say that probably a lot of people were afraid in 1993, in the beginning of the new state. There were a lot of uncertainties. And when thinking about the whole process of transition, I would say that the transition was rather successful. It's more successful story, although we are challenged by everyday problems and so on. But anyway, I did some comparisons of transitions in other parts of the world, and I would say that this is probably more successful than anyone or experts could suppose in the beginning.
Mr. Plesl, would you agree with that?
I would totally say that we are living in the best times ever. I think the Czech Republic has never been so well off like it is right now. We are enjoying incredible amounts of freedoms. We are enjoying incredible economic boom, and the perspectives for the country are only positive now.
Mr. Skála, is your view different than...
I second Professor Dvořáková only in one point. I mean the form, how the country was split. That's true. It was peaceful, without turbulences, without any violence and so on, which, if you compare it with some other countries of the Eastern Europe, it's much, much better and way better. I would not second what was said about the contents of what was happening, I mean, since the split of the country. Since everybody knows that the split itself took place against the will of the majority of the people, both in Czech Republic and Slovakia. And secondly, it opened the door, the gate, to what I would call neoliberal extremism, which we see in this country. Just now, I mean, we are on the eve of another wave of what some people call the revolution of the rich, which is making the rich even more rich and those who are not rich even less rich.
Would you agree that the standard of living, though, is on the constant rise?
There is a minority of this society which is living much better than before. And there is a majority of this society which is living maximum about the same level like some 15, 20 years ago. And there are many people which are living even worse.
So I see the views are very different on this issue. Mr. Plesl, you got anything to say about what Mr. Skála had to say?
I think to the majority of the population, the most important fact is that we are living in a completely free country. Nobody is being sent to jail for whatever he or she thinks, says, or writes. And that's a major, major challenge compared to the communist past of the country.
Let's go back now to the time 15 years ago when Czechoslovakia split. How did you personally feel about it, Professor Dvořáková?
I was born Czechoslovak, and I think that most of the Czechs had the identity that was first Czechoslovak and second the Czech. So I even do remember that at the midnight, and when there was first they played the Czechoslovak anthem and then they played only the Czech anthem, I started to cry like it's the end of something. And my children asked me, "Well, ma'am, what's happening?" And I didn't know how to explain them. And I said one of the most stupid things I could ever say. And I said, "You know, in this moment, we do not have bears in our country because the bears are living only in the Slovak mountains." Well, I have to say that I'm optimistic because now I heard that the bears are moving from Slovakia also to Moravia. So it's not as bad. But I would say that I was strong against that. But as a political scientist, I was quite sure that there was one problem, that the political scene all the time was discussing all the problems of the Czechs and Slovaks, and there was no space to solve other problems that was necessary to solve. And now, 15 years after, maybe I'm able to accept that and think, okay, maybe this was after all the best solution. In some sense, still today I'm sure that it was not inevitable. There were other chances.
Mr. Scala, do you think that it was not inevitable, that it could have been prevented?
I am absolutely sure it could have been prevented, and those who remember that period and were not, let's say, following politics only through tabloids and similar resources would agree with me that...
Tabloids didn't exist then, you know.
Partially.
Yeah,
would agree with me that the decision was done because of very personal and political ambitions of a small group of politicians. The elections in 1992 had a totally different result in Slovakia and in Czech Republic. And, as you remember, perhaps that time structure of the Federal Assembly and the rules, let's say, in the Federal Assembly, preventing the majorization, I mean, of Czechs towards Slovaks, were in fact blocking any efforts to go the way which Czech Republic was then going, I mean, after the split of the country. But let me draw the attention to the economic dimension of everything. Yes, during the previous period, we Czechs were providing quite big, let's call it, subsidies to the Slovak Republic. Yes, there was a big redistribution of the national income, of GDP, towards Slovakia. Yes, there were many new investments in Slovakia. By splitting the country, we lost simply these assets. Absolutely. We are not anymore the owners of these assets. This is a nonsense which, I'm sorry, I mean, why we should have lost such big assets?
But some might argue that the issue of Slovak autonomy, at least, or even independence, would have remained on the agenda of politicians if Czechoslovakia had not split. Mr. Plesl, what is your view on that?
Totally. I think the split was absolutely inevitable. And I remember I was at the university at the time and I was 19 and I had lots of schoolmates who were Slovaks. And we shared the opinion that it's so important that Slovakia becomes independent. And even Slovaks who were against Mečiar and the nationalistic parties thought that it is going to be much healthier for Slovakia if it gets through this nationalistic period in its own state, that it will try its independence and it will experience not only the benefits of being an independent state, but also the costs of being an independent state. And I must say that among my peers, the sentiment towards the split was very much positive, as I remember. I felt happy when the country split on January 1st, 1993.
Looking at the issue of the split of the country in a broader perspective, brings an interesting question. One of the issues the current Czech Republic is often criticized from abroad is the way it treats its minorities. The problem seems to run through modern Czech history. The pre-war country of Czechoslovakia had problems with the large German minority. Would you ever think of the problem of the split and of the foundation of two independent states as of the Czechs getting rid of yet another minority, the Slovak minority this time?
In some sense, this can be interpretation. One of the problems of living together was the question of the institutions and the way how Federal Assembly worked. Yeah, it's very often said. But on the other hand, this is something that we can find in a lot of countries when they do have minorities. And the problem is of the people being able to communicate, be able to find compromises, be able to look for consensus and so on. But there was no really culture how to find compromises and how to find some solution. I do agree that majority of people were against the split, as I know, according to public opinion polls in those times. But there was no ability to find compromise, how to live together. So I think the basic problem is, and this is with those minorities you ask, that maybe this could have also a negative impact on the future development, that there is some tradition like you do have problem, you can transfer your minorities. And this was the way what we did with the Slovaks, or partly it was accepted, like we would not have problem if the Slovaks would be independent, but it was seen even later. And this was mainly connected with the Romanis. If we are thinking about how was the past, the law on citizenship, and the first interpretation of this law, that even I know that was called anti-Gypsy law in the Ministry of Interior when they were preparing that. And this, in fact, lost a lot of Romanis who came originally from Slovakia without any citizenship and without any social support. And probably there was dream of some groups like, we would solve that, we will send them back to Slovakia. And only after the pressure that was done from Europe, I think this change, and there was changed the rules, and also they were able to get together the Czech citizenship and the same rights as all the Czechs. So it is partly connected with this tradition, like if there is a problem, the best solution is to send it somewhere else.
Dr. Skala, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would second and even develop a little bit more this opinion. As you know, we have now, if I'm not mistaken, several hundreds of thousands of Slovaks, which are, as the Germans call it, Gastarbeiter, I mean, the people working in Czech Republic, moving and so on. That's A. So the problem which was kicked through the door is coming back, I mean, through the window, as we Czechs call it. Secondly, with Romanis, I absolutely agree. This is the most twisted repercussion of all the developments, I mean, we speak about. Romanis are, yeah, people of a different culture, and their adaptation, I mean, to the European culture is a long-term process, which is not easy, and so on. During the previous period, we reached quite substantial results in this. At least, I mean, these people were working, they had jobs, they had education, they had basic, let's say, elements of a modern culture, housing and so on. Today, it's a totally different situation. And I think this is one of the centers of tension inside the society, which is growing and which is causing big troubles, including, I mean, growing criminality and so on and so on. So, yeah, I would second, I mean, such an opinion.
Mr. Plesl, what is needed for the Romani community to feel at home here? Do they need a strong leader? Do they need to generate some kind of political movement among themselves?
Absolutely. I think it's absolutely inevitable that they establish themselves a political movement that will enter the mainstream politics in the Czech Republic. Unless they do this, they are never going to get, in their opinion, an equal part of the Czech society. And for that, education is absolutely crucial, because unless you see a strong base for a gypsy elite in the Czech society, that, thank God, started being formed in the previous years, we are not gonna move anywhere with this problem, because that really, really requires lots of education and lots of affirmative action in order to get them educated.
One of the issues constantly reappearing in the Czech Republic has to do with various aspects of the country's communist past. Recently, several public personalities have been accused of collaboration with the communist secret police. Dr. Skala, what do you think of the way Czechs have dealt with the legacy of communism?
Look, at the end of the 80s, in the whole of Czechoslovakia, there were 1.7 million members of the Communist Party. Members of the Communist Party were not in every family, but in every second family whatsoever, this or that way. I'm quite proud not to go the way of many others which jumped out and were trying to distance themselves from this and that and so on. Coming back to your question, Legacy. Let's apply the same standards. Let's say, prevent applying double standards. I belong to a generation which could not have anything in common with the things in the 50s, which were really very problematic. Though I still feel some sort of moral, not responsibility, moral trauma. Yeah, I think this should never happen again, and we are bearing this legacy somehow with us, even my generation. And we are permanently thinking how to prevent anything similar in the future. But the same matter of fact is that the Cold War was not initiated by any Stalin or Gottwald and so on. It was an attack, I mean, from the other side. There was a defense against them, which was causing things also which should not have happened. But this would be a big topic for a big debate, which I'm sure we cannot have today.
That certainly would be a big topic. Mr. Plesl, do you agree with those voices who say that the Communist Party should have been banned right after 1989 as a criminal organization?
No, I'm liberal and I think nothing should be banned. To me, I would legalize even like the Nazi movement. Unless they attack somebody, they can say whatever they want. So I think the same for the commies. But personally think that the worst thing in the communist legacy on this country is the destruction of values in the society, and that's something that is really, really difficult for me to see even in people of my generation. because I think people have used to the fact they're getting a lot for free, that they don't have to be active in order to gain. And that's something that they've learned from the communists, and that's my biggest personal problem with the communists.
Well, I think that you asked the question of the collaboration. It seems to me that we concentrated too much on these things. They are important for researchers and so on. You can find the information to understand something. But speaking of the people that he or she is in the files, if not know what were the circumstances, what really happened with these people, it can be very strongly politically misused. What I miss here is the real research of the past. For me as a political scientist, much more important is to understand how the control was gained, how was decision-making done, what was the state apparatus working like, and so on. Because these things, you know, do continue even after the end of the regime.
But
we know how the system worked. It was a totalitarian system that kept the control over the society by blackmailing people, by sending people to jail, by taking their jobs away from them, by preventing them joining families that left for the West. It was all repressive system that was constantly destroying freedoms of all the humans living in the same country. No matter whether they were members of the Communist Party or not, everybody was basically living in jail. So we know how the system worked, and I understand completely that some people feel offended when they find out that somebody helped to keep the regime alive by cooperating with the secret police. I feel offended when I find out that somebody who is in the public life or in the government or wherever was reporting the secret police on the actions of people who were around him. And I understand why, because even though I was like 16 in 1989, I remember things that were really, really bad in the regime, and I still have it in my mind. And you just cannot adore somebody who helped the regime that would not let you visit your relatives living in Switzerland because you may not come back. You know, what is this? It's like from today's point of view, this seems totally bizarre, and I think I will have a very difficult time explaining to my children what it was like living under communists.
But, you know, I'm speaking about really the research on the topic, because what you are saying are the basic features, but to understand what was it, how it really worked in details, in this extreme...
No, it was just blackmailing, criminalizing people's acts.
Okay,
we know the basics.
So you do agree with me that it's for nothing to have this Institute for Studies of Totalitarian, because we know how it worked. So it's why we are paying for that.
No, we will only find out about more and more people who were helping the communists to keep the regime.
So even in this say, we don't need to study Holocaust because we also know how it works.
I think we do.
Yeah.
No, I think it is important.
This was like
I think
that
it is important
more
to study it, but it's not going to reveal any major news about the system. It's good for historians, but I don't think this is going to affect the thinking of the society, like no new findings about the Holocaust is going to affect the societies of Germany or Israel or Poland.
If I may add something, I think we are putting here a picture of the past which is quite far from reality, though there were some elements which Mr. Pless is speaking about, but the whole of the reality was totally different. And yes, I was
living here.
Me too.
But you were a part of the establishment. I wasn't.
To be a part of the establishment,
you have to protect it.
No. There's many people which were also part of the establishment, and they are now with billions, you know, like ministers of Klaus government and so on. I was not any agent and any officer of STB, nothing like this. I simply keep my way. That's my personal decision. Once, you know, there'll be also lists of the agents of BIS and the other agencies. You think they don't intervene our lives? Do you really believe in this? Really,
they're,
you believe in it?
Probably not burning other people's
I have two more points. Look, we are now living 18 years after November 89, which is compared, let's say, with the mid of the 60s. If you compare since February 48, then it was the mid of the 60s. And now, please, compare the atmosphere in the mid of 60s in Czechoslovakia. To which extent the regime, if you call it like this, was still trying to find, let's say, scapegoats and explanations and so on for its mistakes and for its, I don't know, troubles in the past. Now it is, if not 10, it's 100 times more. We are permanently looking somewhere trying to find those who are guilty for the today's problems.
It's not true. We have elections. We get rid of the political elite and establish new one. This is how it is solved in democracy.
Most of the people did not have troubles which you speak about at all. They are living in a totally different atmosphere.
Well, that probably remains to be settled in one of our future debates. My final question for our guests at Radio Prague. When you look back 15 years ago, is the Czech Republic where you then thought it would be in 2008, Professor Dvořáková?
I would say that maybe I was a little bit more pessimistic. So I would say that although I'm critical to a lot of things, it's better than I supposed.
Mr. Plesl?
I think the Czech Republic is like 10 to 15 years ahead of my personal schedule.
And Dr. Skala?
Paradoxically, my mistake in the forecasts done, say, 15 years ago was that even myself, I was not expecting that all the positive accumulations done during the previous decades would survive so long and would delay all the social and other, let's say, repercussions so long.
And that was the last answer of Radio Prague special New Year's Day program, where our guests, Professor Vladimíra Dvořáková, Dr. Josef Skála and Jaroslav Plesl, discussed the developments of the Czech Republic that was founded 15 years ago today. Thank you for joining me in the studio. From me, Jan Richter, goodbye and tune in to Radio Prague again soon.